Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, pledging to help end child hunger in the Carolinas through ongoing support of Second Harvest Food Bank of Metrolina. Details about this initiative at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. The 2018 congressional race in North Carolina's 9th District was one of the very few examples of voter fraud to be found anywhere in the country. It also marked the first time in 80 years that a congressional race was deemed void and rerun. The scandal centered on alleged tampering with absentee ballots by an operative of the Republican candidate and painfully unfolded for months and months and months. That steady trickle of information focused on the allegations and the outcome, but a closer look reveals something deeper about America and its fractured relationship with elections, one that becomes clearer in a new book by two local reporters. WBTV's chief investigative reporter Nick Oxner and Axios Charlotte's Michael Graff. The book is The Vote Collectors, the true story of the scamsters, politicians, and preachers behind the nation's greatest electoral fraud. And both authors join us for the hour. Welcome to you both.
Hi, good morning. Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Michael, scamsters. Why not just scammers?
That's a great question. I'm not sure that, everybody there knows that they're scamming everybody sometimes. So I guess we try to do a little play on the word. But that's the funny thing is folks there have, a lot of the folks we interviewed throughout this thing just had an interesting relationship with the truth, I'll put it that way.
There's a lot of that going around these days, I got to tell you. This is the story that keeps on giving, a gift that keeps on giving, Nick. And yesterday, before we talk about the book, yesterday there was some more news from McRae Dallas. He's the political operative at the center of this election fraud scandal. He pleaded not guilty to charges in that case. He rejected a plea deal, which would have significantly reduced the sentence he might get if he's found guilty when it goes to trial. What does that tell you?
Well, I know this because I talked to him yesterday after he left court. He believes that he did not break the law, full stop, and what he did, and his crimes relate to both the 2016 election and the 2018 election. And he believes he's not going to be convicted. And so he has said from the get-go that he's not going to accept a plea deal, and he did not accept one yesterday. You'll be interested to know he's particularly incensed at the suggestion that he would be on probation for 5 years.
You continually have been talking to McRae Dallas all through this, and we'll talk about how that developed. But after his first arrest in February 2019, he spoke exclusively with you, Nick, after he left jail, saying the truth will prevail on it all. From what you know from your reporting on this story and the research that you and Michael did as you conducted it for this book, how surprised would you be if the truth turned out to be anything other than what you reported?
Oh, I think what we've reported and certainly what's in the book is all true. That being said, Mike, you know this as well as anyone else, the truth has different shades and we'll see which shade ends up coming out in a trial. That being said, election fraud and voter fraud both are very difficult crimes to prove. We saw the feds look at McRae Dallas for potential crimes and charges related to that. He ultimately was indicted on Social Security disability fraud, to which he's pleaded guilty. But it's very difficult to prove. And Michael and I obtained his entire criminal discovery file for the state charges. And there is no smoking gun in the discovery file. You might have expected to turn to page 3010 and seen a picture of McRae holding someone's absentee ballot in their hand, but that doesn't exist. There's no recordings. And so I think I'm interested to see the trial. He's set for trial late August of 2022. I'm interested to see how Lauren Freeman, the Wake County District Attorney who's prosecuting him, turns this into something she thinks will lead to a conviction.
Michael, sordid tale has been going on for several years now. And as Nick just mentioned, the trial will not be until late August of next year. He just decided to plead not guilty to the charges yesterday, which will now go to trial. So why this book now? Why not wait until after the trial?
I will say that there were several times last year when claims of fraud were going around that Nick and I wanted to push publish the right at the moment it came out. So why now? Part of it is just it took us 2 years to report and write the book, to really get to weed through all of the things that folks were telling us, to try to verify things and stuff like that. But I think it's an important book right now. Because these conversations about fraud are going on around the country. And I think it's important to know what's true and what isn't about it. And to know what environments, I think that's what our book does more than anything. Bladen County is a character in our book. It's not just a book about politics. It's not going to sit on the politics shelf at most bookstores and next to the other books. It's more of a story about a place and the people and the environments that create the situations that create environments that are ripe for folks to need to take that extra $100 to go collect absentee ballot request forms and things like that. So our book is more about the bigger picture of why this happened in Bladen County and what other places that are like Bladen County should be looking for, I think, and to make sure it doesn't happen there.
Nick didn't grow up in Bladen County, but he grew up nearby, and you didn't grow up in Bladen County, Michael. You grew up in a similar place, I believe. Was it the Eastern Shore of Maryland? Is that accurate?
Yeah, well, Southern Maryland, which is, yeah.
So you both understand the zeitgeist of that part of the world, I guess. Is that something that, as you say, that Bladen is a character in the book, is that something that people from outside, even from Charlotte, we're closer than people in Missouri are to that area. Is that something that people will understand easily? Or is it something that is that out of the ordinary?
Well, I hope that people, we said this several times, I hope that people of Bladen read it and say, you know what, they put a mirror up to us and this is a pretty accurate portrayal of us. But I hope people from outside will read it and say, you know what, now I care about places like this. Now I care about places like Bladen County where they are, the folk, I mean, the issues that they face there are far different. Trust me, I help run our Charlotte Axios Instagram account. Every time we post something on our Instagram in Charlotte, folks are yelling at us about this thing or that thing, or whether this restaurant should stay open or that restaurant should stay open. I'm saying, I think, you know, I wonder how the folks, you know, would feel if they had real issues like say flooding every year from hurricanes and sort of deep, deep poverty throughout the county. I mean, I think sometimes I feel like that. So,
and Nick, you know, both, Bladen County is a special place, and it's also a uniquely weird place and different. and if you drove down 74 right now, two and a half hours from here, you would end up there and you would think to yourself, where am I? Right. If someone just drove from Plaza to Elizabethtown today. And I think it was important to us to try to develop that in the book in a way people really felt and could really connect with. So they understood the setting where all these things, these also deeply weird things, are taking place.
And what is it about that part of the world that makes it, I don't want to use the word susceptible, but I'm going to use it because I haven't got a better one at the moment, susceptible to this kind of shenanigans?
Yeah, I like the shenanigans word. All right. So, you know, Mike just kind of alluded to this, and this isn't unique just to Bladen County. We've seen stories like this and allegations and cases like this play out in rural counties all across North Carolina. The number one thing, Mike, is folks in Bladen County need jobs to do, and they feel marginalized, generally speaking. And so, as Mike just said, if the best paying job you're going to get that day is $100-$150 to go round up absentee request forms, that, you know, and you've got a campaign coming in that's going to drop $130 million, like the Mark Harris campaign did in Bladen County, and the Democrats are spending, yes, $130,000, like the Mark Harris campaign did in Bladen County, and like, you know, the Democrats spent a lot of money in Bladen too. That creates an opportunity where people are going to go work for the big campaign and all their big money. And also, people feel like, I mean, truly, like they don't have really a say in the political process in Bladen County, in places like Bladen County. You know, you talk to anybody, just normal folk, and they would say, oh, well, all the politicians are crooked. You can't trust them anyways. And they feel disconnected because they feel marginalized. They feel forgotten, just like they were forgotten when the hurricanes came, just like they were forgotten during the opioid epidemic, just like they were forgotten when their manufacturing jobs left. And that's how you create a situation, Mike, where things like this can happen.
You know, Michael, both you and Nick worked on this story as it unfolded for different outlets, you for Axios and Nick for WBTV. Why write the book together? Did you know each other before this all began to unfold? I mean, you could have had two books, kept all the money for all the tons of money that's coming in from the sales of this book for yourself. But no, you have to split it 50-50 now.
I get by with a little help from my friends. We needed each other for this. Nick and I have two different sets of skills, and Nick's an investigative reporter, and I've long been more of a long form feature writer that looks at things from 10,000 feet and tries to put it in perspective. What does this mean in terms of the history of North Carolina? Those are the questions that I go into stories with. Nick is diving deep into documents and getting people somehow to give him criminal discovery files with 3,000 pages or something like that. And so I walked into this story. Nick and I have been friends for years. We saw each other. I was reporting a story for Politico magazine. I went out to the 9th District in December 2018, working on this sort of bigger picture story. And I saw Nick standing out in front of the courthouse with a camera in front of his face. And I'd known him for years. And I just said, hey, let's get together again sometime. Somehow 2 months later, we were getting together a lot. It started mostly because I knew that Nick had access to things that nobody else had. And I have a book agent and connections to the literary world that he didn't have. And so we just kind of talked like, you know, why don't we try to do this not just as any other political book, why don't we try to do this as a story that's not just gonna get a bunch of sales on the first day, but let's try to write something that could last. Let's try to write something that could be a real cultural piece about what it's like to live there right now.
It's kind of an historical record piece that also brings in the neighborhood in which it happened, with a contextual understanding of why it may have happened there, if it in fact happened. We'll find that out in late August, I suppose.
Oh, something happened.
Something clearly happened. Yes, that is true. Since you worked together on this and you both brought your own reporting to this book, as you worked on the book, Nick, did anything that Michael brought to the table surprise you, and vice versa, Michael? Anything that Nick bring to the table that perhaps you hadn't seen on television or read online that surprised you, Nick?
I mean, the biggest thing, Michael Graff brings just his incredible ability to write beautiful things, right? If I'd written this book by myself, it would have been maybe deeply interesting for about 80 pages and very boring the rest of the time. And instead we have this beautiful yarn of you know, what I hope will live in Southern culture. But you know, the biggest thing that Mike brought to the book was all of part two, which is all about the history of Southeastern North Carolina, race and politics in Southeastern North Carolina. And he brings a deep understanding of the history there. And some of the things that are just crazy, you know, you talk about the last Black congressman in the US Congress before Jim Crow era, shut Black people out of Congress for decades, was a guy named George Henry White, who was born in Bladen County. It's incredible. And whose family is connected to Bladen County more largely.
And Michael, I read that you don't like to write. You'd rather report, but you're credited with writing the big second part of this book, which is the historical perspective, which we'll talk about. We have to take a break. We'll come back and talk with more with the authors of The Vote Collectors, Nick Oxner and Michael Graff, in a moment at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that share Mazda's passion that cars make driving matter. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. If COVID has dominated news coverage of the last 18 months, The story before that is the one we're talking about today, which certainly dominated news coverage in this state and certainly in this city, primarily due to the reporting of these two individuals we have on the air right now, Nick Oxner from WBTV and Michael Graff, who is editor of Axios Charlotte. Together, they have written a book called The Vote Collectors, the true story of the scamsters, politicians, and preachers behind the nation's greatest election fraud. Big story here, not necessarily in Iowa. However, let's talk about that, because there may be a lot of newcomers who are listening this morning who have no clue about what we're talking about, in spite of the fact that we talked about it to death for about 2 years. So let's back up a little and get a little refresher for newcomers and for people who have forgotten a lot of the details. In 2018, there was a race in North Carolina's ninth congressional district, pitting Republican Mark Harris against Democrat Dan McCready. Both were political newcomers for the most part, though Mark Harris was well known in this area because he was at the time the pastor of the First Baptist Church here in Charlotte. To help him win, Mark Harris hired this guy named McCray Dowless. McCray Dowless has worked for both Republicans and Democrats. So who is he, and why does he do what he does, Michael?
McCray is an interesting fellow. Let's say that. He's a chain-smoking operative who sits and does most of his work at his kitchen table surrounded by wood-paneled walls. He puts his Christmas decorations out on November 1st and keeps them up until February 1st. He's one of those types of folks. But he also is somebody who is deeply invested in politics.
Why? Because he works for both parties. He's not like a rabid partisan. So why?
Well, he was convicted of insurance fraud in the early 1990s, and he joined politics to get back at the district attorney who put him to jail. He wanted to get him out of office. After McCray got out of jail, he wanted to help get out the vote for this guy's competitor. And so he joined and started working with a group that was working with a group called the Bladen Improvement Association, which is a Black political action committee in Eastern North Carolina. And he learned a lot of, tricks of the trade there, knocking on doors, telling people, hey, you know, there's an election. None of that part is illegal. I guess the question in everybody's mind, though, is always, how far did he go with that? Did he actually pick up ballots? Because that's illegal. Did they actually pick up ballots? Because that's illegal. But he did learn all of the tricks of the trade, like marking houses and saying that's a Republican and that's a Democrat, or marking, you know, that person could switch sides this time, or was close to switching sides last time, and getting the voter rolls and checking. So McCray, if you ride in a car with McCray Dowless, you can drive all around Bladen County and he can tell you exactly who that person voted for in the most recent election.
That's amazing. Nick, Dowless describes you as one of his best friends. We'll talk about that in a second. But he also paid what you describe as clueless citizen vote collectors to go door to door and collect absentee ballots. That is illegal. So tell us why that's illegal, and tell me, is that something that Mark Harris, the Republican candidate, hired him to do, knew he was doing, or is it something that McCray Dowless took upon himself to do on Mark's behalf?
Blow out the brakes for the rest of the show, Mike, because you just asked a question that we could spend the next 30 minutes talking about in that one question. Let's try to unpack that a little bit. So first, McCray would tell you that he doesn't collect the ballots. He maintains that he doesn't collect the ballots. I guess that'll be for a jury to decide, I guess, next August, whether or not he in fact collected ballots. It is worth noting that is just how people vote in Bladen County, for better or for worse, illegal or legal. That is one of my favorite parts of our reporting from right after the scandal broke in 2018. My colleague David Hodges uncovered a complaint that a voter filed with the Bladen County Board of Elections against the Bladen County Improvement Association PAC because they didn't come to collect his ballot that year like they normally had. So it was so normal that someone complained to the Board of Elections because someone hadn't been by to collect his ballot. And so that is how these political groups and these rivals, by 2018, they were rivals, McRae Dallas and the Bladen County Improvement Association. That's how they operate. And it was pretty clear that's how they had operated for a long time, and no one did anything about it until 2018. And so, you know, McRae has claimed up and down he would never collect someone's ballot. Not even a 90-year-old lady, he would walk her to the mailbox and help her put it in, but wouldn't collect it, he says. And so, regardless of what was happening on behalf of McRae Dallas and potentially others, into that walks Mark Harris in Bladen County at the recommendation of a judge named Marion Warren, who at the time ran the North Carolina Administrative Office of the Courts. You know, Mark Harris had run for Congress and challenged Robert Pittenger in the primary in 2016 and lost by about 100 votes or so. And after that, Marion Warren called Mark Harris and said, you need to talk to this guy, McRae Dallas, who got a bunch of votes for a third candidate in the primary named Todd Johnson, who didn't do well overall, but did very well in Bladen County and very well with absentee ballots in the Republican primary. And so Marion Warren introduces or sets up a meeting for Mark Harris to go meet McRae Dallas. It takes place at a discount furniture store on Main Street in Elizabethtown, at the store owned by a county commissioner named Ray Britt in Bladen County. And he goes, and all the big Republican bigwigs say, hey, this is your guy. He's the most knowledgeable person on elections we have in town. He does everything, and he does everything by the book, and you ought to hire him. And it becomes pretty clear pretty quickly, looking now, that Mark Harris convinced himself that everything McRae did was great and legal, even as his son, we now know, tried to warn him as strongly as he could not to hire McRae Dallas because what he thought McRae might be doing something illegal.
That begs this question, Michael. You just mentioned that McRae Dallas, I believe, had been convicted of insurance fraud, and that makes him a convicted felon. I believe I'm right in saying that convicted felons cannot vote. So aside from asking if they should be able to participate in the election process behind the scenes in terms of getting out the vote for a candidate or for a cause, why would a Baptist preacher hire a convicted felon to work for him?
Because he came within, I think, 130 votes of winning in 2016, and he was told that this person was the difference. And that's really what it comes down to. Mark Harris was an ambitious politician as much as he was a Baptist preacher. You can tell that from, he really wanted this job. In talking to him, he's still pained that he doesn't have this job. And I think that that's part of what I think. What's so interesting about the human condition is when you have your sights set on something like that and you're bowling so hard for it, you would even ignore the warnings of your own son. And you would ignore this evidence that he had sent time in prison for fraud. And still to this day, Mark feels like believes fully that he was the victim of this, that somebody should have warned him not to hire McRae. Somebody official in an official capacity should have warned him to not hire McRae Dallas.
So Mike, you can have your rights restored and vote after having been convicted as a felon. Okay. McRae could in fact vote just for McRae.
So Mark Harris loses in 2016. Is it advised, if he wants to really win, to hire this guy in Bladen County in the 2018 race? At the time, the 9th Congressional District spanned five counties, Union, Anson, Richland, Scotland, Robeson, as well as parts of Mecklenburg, Cumberland, and Bladen counties. These alleged shenanigans took place primarily in Bladen County, where evidently there is a history of questionable political activity. Why Bladen County? How can Bladen County be such an influence in the 9th Congressional District? It's among the smallest parts in terms of the number of voters who come to the table. Why then would you put your efforts there?
Well, it's interesting because Mark Harris talks about, we interviewed him and Beth, his wife, for the book, and they talk about their connection to Bladen County and how they liked the people and the place of Bladen County. But more importantly, they picked up on, and I think correctly, actually, that Robert Pittenger was not paying attention to Bladen County, hadn't really been down there, wasn't known to the people. And they looked at the narrow Pittenger's narrow victory in 2016. And they said, if we can just get a couple hundred more votes, we can maybe win the primary. Turns out they were right about that. And so, you know, especially if you do it with the guy, the help of a guy like McRae Dallas, who is basically guaranteed you to get 300 or 400 votes in Bladen County. And suddenly you look like you could be cruising to a path of victory.
So in that race, only 3.5% of voters came from Bladen County, as opposed to 30% from Mecklenburg, 26% from Union, and 15% from Robson County. How did this turn into the fiasco that it was? If there's a history of illegal or illicit or questionable activities when it comes to elections in Bladen County, Michael, what happened this time that it, for the first time in 80 years, a congressional race was thrown out?
Well, I think that district hadn't voted for, am I wrong on this, Nick, hadn't voted for a Democrat since 1960 or something like that. And those weren't even close races. So you had a half century of races that were not close that nobody was paying attention to. Republicans just sweeping to victory and nobody truly caring what happened. But on election night in 2018, Dan McCready came within 905 votes. And so all of a sudden you had everybody counting and looking at every vote. And when the election was called, you know, we still talk about how we, you know, a lot of the work done there, you know, we appreciate all the other work that media outlets did there from Joe Bruno and folks like that. And to go down to Bladen County and turn over some of this stuff, because what happened was everybody started paying attention because it was 905 votes. And when you have a bunch of people paying attention, people are going to eventually find the thing that was ill.
They threw out that race and they ran it again. Dan Bishop, the Republican this time, because Mark Harris decided not to run again. Dan Bishop ran again against Dan McCready, who did decide to run again. And once again, McCready lost. What was the margin the second time around?
That was a nice pop quiz. Thank you, Mike. I don't remember, but it was more than 900.
It was okay. Votes.
Well, that's my point. That's my point was going to be if Mark Harris won by 905 votes, had the election thrown out because of these allegations of fraud, reran the election with different candidates, and the Republicans still won, is that an indication that perhaps there's not a lot here but smoke?
You know what? Mark Harris would probably agree with you on that. And Mike, there's a bigger answer to your question too about how did this happen? It happened in 2018 because no one did anything about it for decades before. I mean, we chronicle in the book all the efforts that the State Board of Elections made to try to get someone, anyone who wasn't having an affair with someone who had paid McRae Dallas to get elected to the county commission and happened to be the district attorney over Bladen County, anyone else to investigate this. And no one did. It sat on the desk of the U.S. attorney for a year, just collecting dust. This 300 plus page dossier on well documented on all the things, all the shenanigans from both Republicans and Democrats going on in Bladen County, and nothing happened to it. And people in Bladen County had been filing complaints on each other since at least 2010, probably before that. And no one did anything until we get to 2018. And what happened in 2018 happened because our systems that we rely on to keep our elections in check didn't work like they were supposed to.
And instead of investigating that, the U.S. attorney was investigating a handful, a dozen or more individual voter fraud cases that had come to him with regard to immigrants voting in Eastern North Carolina. So this was the attention that paid a great amount of attention to these dozen to 18 or so people, individual small cases. A lot of them were proven false too, instead of investigating the major operation that was had for 2 years. So
the two of you, Michael, seem to conclude that guilty or not, McRae Dallas is the, quote, fall guy for a country that struggled to acknowledge its racist past and the role of big money politics in exacerbating inequities. Explain that.
I think that we show in the book that there's a straight line from Reconstruction to what happened in 2018. It only takes a couple of generations to see how what happened to effectively squeeze George Henry White out of office in 2000 or in 1900 with grandfather clauses and literacy tests that effectively disenfranchised most Black voters in Eastern North Carolina. The obvious need for Black political action committees to form to create representation on local boards of election. Those organizations from Durham to Charlotte to Bladen County gaining an increased amount of power over the years, and especially in the late 90s and early 2000s. And in Bladen County, the Black Political Action Committee finally got a Black sheriff elected. And what ended up happening after that was there was this, what we call a white in the book, a white backlash to that, where McRae Dallas went to work for essentially mostly white candidates to try to get a white sheriff back in office. Mm-hmm. And Mark Harris and Dan McCready found themselves caught in all of that. You know, that this had nothing to do with them. But so that's what we mean by a country that needs to reckon with its past.
This is your big, I mean, you contributed to all parts of the book. I don't mean to minimize your, but the book is divided into three parts. And the middle part is this extensive history of that part of our world. And you take us back well beyond modern history, as you already have, to the late 19th century, actually to 1898, and the white supremacist uprising that resulted in the only coup, at least until January 6th, the only successful coup in American history. They turned out legally elected Black politicians. Violence and murder ensued. And you follow that up with a history lesson that includes the rise of industrial hog farming in that area. I know that this was your idea to do it this way, and you've been planning this as a book of your own, this section, this history of that part of the world. How does all this fit together with McRae Dallas and the sordid details of what happened in the 9th District? And you have 28 seconds.
We put it's 100 pages in a book. 20 seconds.
We'll come back. I looked at the clock. Not fair. I looked at the clock as I came to the end of the question, and I realized you have 28 seconds. We'll come back and get the answer from Michael Grapp, editor of Axios Charlotte, along with Nick Oxter, chief investigative reporter with WBTV, and the co-authors of The Vote Collectors. It's Charlotte Talks. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to Mazda's focus to ensure every element of a car is designed around the driver. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're here with the authors of The Vote Collectors, the true story of scamsters, politicians, and preachers behind the nation's greatest election fraud. Nick Oxner, who's the chief investigative reporter for WBTV News, who covered this intensively during the time period that it occurred, as did Michael Graff, the editor of Axios Charlotte. So I just ask you an impossible question. The whole middle part of this book you contributed to, Michael, it's the history of that part of the world and the impact of it and I guess how it plays into what just happened down there a couple of years ago. How does it play in?
Well, I mean, I think that immediately anybody who traveled to Bladen County and covered this saw that you had a very clear case of a Black political action committee and a group of white people who wouldn't call themselves a white political action committee, but they were essentially mostly white folks who were rounding up votes for one candidate and Black political action committee rounding up votes for other candidates. And, you know, that was covered extensively. It came out in our first story, but I like to look at things in terms of, okay, so why is that there? Let's look at the water, not just the shark, as you say. Like, you know, let's try to see what's going on under the surface here. And then as you start to just, I mean, all you have to do is go back one generation with the formation of the Bladen Improvement Association, and then another generation with the formation of the Durham Committee for Negro Affairs, which was the grandfather to all of these organizations. And then one more generation to George Henry White standing on the floor of Congress saying, you know, one day, Phoenix-like, the Black politician will rise up again. And And so his words were prophetic, I thought, and he was from Bladen County. So I think it's just really important to sort of, when you're looking at anybody, whether it's somebody standing on a corner or anything like that, to say, what brought you here right now? And that's kind of what my work has been throughout my career.
There are a lot of people in North Carolina who don't know anything at all about this uprising in 1898 that is the only successful coup in American history. And nobody outside of North Carolina knows anything about it, probably, except one author that we talked to about it when he wrote a book about it several years ago. But you say, Michael, you told Charlotte Magazine that had the white supremacy uprising in Wilmington of 1898 never happened, Wilmington would most likely be the largest city in the South today, and that Bladen County would be the size of Union County. That's really surprising information. The coup had that much impact to this day?
Yeah, I mean, folks left. I mean, you had all of your leaders, your government leaders, your business leaders, your lawyers, people like that left. Why would they want to be in that city anymore? You know, one of our great leaders in Charlotte, Hugh McCall, has always said racism is very expensive. It costs money. If people always realize that if you work together and got rid of and stop being racist and business today, you could make a lot more money. It's as economic as it is human in some ways for Wilmington. Wilmington was the largest city in North Carolina at the time.
And Nick, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, and I said it, most of the leadership was Black. And then most of them had to leave, including George Henry White, who started his own town in New Jersey, not North Carolina.
And Nick, you say that race dominates this story because, quote, it dominates everything in Bladen County among Black people and white people. And a couple of months ago, we spoke with Zoe Chase, who is a reporter for a podcast entitled The Improvement Association, and that's been referenced already in this conversation. It's the Bladen County Improvement Association, PAC. She reported that there are white Republicans in Bladen County who say that whatever McRae Dallas is accused of doing, the Black organization, the Bladen County Improvement Association, was doing it first. Everything from bullying voters to tampering with ballots to stealing votes outright. Those are all allegations, of course, that have never been substantiated, but the allegation is that if McRae has done it, they did it first. Have you heard the same thing?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I've certainly heard it. You hear it about the second you step foot in Bladen County. I heard it the second I stepped foot in McRae Dallas's kitchen.
Any reason to believe it, or is it simply racism?
No, it's not just racism, although I think there's probably a tinge of that as well. But Mike, that story I told you about the guy complaining that his ballot hadn't been picked up. Well, that was the guy complaining that the Bladen Improvement Association hadn't picked up his ballot. When you look at the 300 plus page dossier from the State Board of Elections transmitted to the U.S. Attorney's Office, it talks about McRae Dallas an awful lot and the people who worked for him. And it also talked about things the Bladen County Improvement Association were doing. Josh Lawson, who is the general counsel for the State Board of Elections, at the time of the 9th Congressional District scandal and leading up to that, had a meeting with prosecutors about this, and he's a prolific note taker, and wrote in his notes, both sides, both sides, both sides, and underlined it. And it's important to grasp this point, Mike, because people need to understand that simply prosecuting McRae Dallas isn't going to cure what ailed Bladen County in 2018. And it's important to understand how this happens. And it's really important to understand that what happened in Bladen County in 2018 was not the result of one dude hired by one politician in one election. This is a systemic thing.
So if there's a tradition of election shenanigans or cheating or whatever you want to call it on both sides of the aisle in Bladen County, is the motivation political? Or is it strictly based on economics, money coming into the coffers? What is it?
Well, I really think it's based on power. Secondary money, and third, political. But people want power. And what happened in 2018, it certainly revolved around Mark Harris and Dan McCready, but it really had little to do with Mark Harris and Dan McCready. Again, the first minutes I'm sitting inside McRae Dallas's kitchen, I wasn't hearing about, I'm ready to hear about what happened in 2018. And dive into that for some big scoop. And instead, I have Ray Britt, this county commissioner, who I think was chair or vice chair of the commission at the time, launching into what happened in the 2010 election and some ballots in a nursing home. And what happened in the 2010 election? That's when the Black sheriff, Bladen County's first and only Black sheriff, was elected.
This may be an unfair question, Michael, but if you agree with Nick's assessment of the situation in Bladen, are they a loner, or is this happening in other counties, in other parts of this state and other parts of other states?
Well, it took 2 years to investigate this one, but yes, I mean, this is happening. I mean, if you want to hear about rumors in Swain County, you can hear them. If you want to, I mean, we've already done this on our tour. We went to Asheville the first night and folks were like, this is happening here. And you know, you heard it. I was the reporter at the Fayetteville Observer for years, the folks in Robeson County. My gosh, they've been complaining about this for years, saying, please look at us, please look at us, please come check it out. You know, if this investigation did anything, it gave the State Board of Elections at least a chance to pause and look at a place.
And Nick, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I do agree with Nick on the power thing. But you know, one of the things you've said is that, you know, folks say that it was another group before us and another group before them. I mean, that's why we went back to 1865, was to continue to trace it back, which group kept doing it first, because and we saw the seeds of the original. And in our book, we show, you know, the original sort of vote tampering.
And Nick has said that the most surprising or disappointing takeaway in this book is the fact that people have known about what's going on in Bladen County and in Bladen County elections for years leading up to 2018 by both Republicans and Democrats and didn't do anything about it. We keep hearing from Republicans at the national level and local level that voter fraud and election fraud is rampant throughout the country and that it was rampant throughout the last presidential election. And election operators and attorneys general in all the states say, no, none of that is true. There are no instances of this having happened in the last presidential election. But if this stuff is happening in Bladen County on both sides, does law enforcement have blinders on? Could illegal election activity actually be having a larger impact than we know about or that we're willing to admit?
Michael. I think that in the case of last year, I mean, you had extensive investigations and recounts. And I think that one of the things that we have to do is give credit to all the people who investigated all those claims of fraud and found no evidence that the election should be changed. So, you know, I don't think that in this case, we always talk, for some reason in the modern world, we talk about things as this or that. I think it's probably, I would say, Is voter fraud and election fraud rampant? No. Can it happen under the right circumstances with the right people who are willing to play the right games and have enough money to do it? They can get kind of close and you have systems in place to stop them. And if those systems don't work, they might be able to get through. I mean, I think the key is to have the systems in place to stop them and to stop them when you
Given what you know from this investigation that you've done in of McRae Dowless and what happened in Bladen County, when politicians raise the specter of election and or voter fraud in elections, are they doing so because they know it goes on or that their party or they themselves have been involved in it?
I think it's normally much more bad faith than that. But here's the problem, Mike, and here's why it's important that our systems work every time, and they failed in Bladen County in 2018, they worked in 18, they failed leading up to it, is that we need to be able to trust the systems without a doubt. And let's remember, what happened in Bladen County is much more small scale than, you know, Hugo Chavez rigging some election voting systems, right? That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about a couple folks with paper going door to door. And so it's a lot harder and on a much more micro scale. But I think part of the reason that these rumors and the speculation and these falsehoods are able to catch fire like they have in this country is because we know there have been the one-off situations that largely happen because we have evidence that the system doesn't always work. And that's why we need our systems to work.
As you reported this story for WBTV, Nick, you were able to get pretty darn close, almost from the very beginning, to McRae Dowless, the central figure in all of this. He seemed willing to talk to you more than anyone else. How did you develop that rapport?
Sure. So the first place I went in Bladen County to report this story turned out to be McRae Dallas's house. Like I think you mentioned earlier, I'm from Hope Mills, North Carolina, 30 minutes from Bladen County. As I like to say, the closest point of civilization you can get to Bladen County. And so I knew a friend of a friend of a friend put me in touch with McRae. And I was driving to Bladen County that first morning, didn't know what I was going to get, just knew I was going to go down there and see because this had blown up. And I'd kind of resisted covering it. But here I was, and it was the story. So I'm going to go. And this friend of a friend of a friend says, I'll call McRae. He's probably not going to want to talk to you, but I'll see. And he calls back and says, here's McRae's number. He's expecting your call. And so I call and I get on the phone with McRae. And he says, well, you come into the house, ain't you? And I said, yeah, I'll be right there. And I got there. Partly because this friend of a friend of a friend recommended that he talk to me, and he recommended that because the guy who gave me his number recommended that this guy talk to me, and partly because I was from Hope Mills. And the first words that I said when I shook his hand, and this has proven to be true, as we just talked about, I said to him, I don't know what you have or haven't done, but I know you're not the only person who did it. And that turned out to be pretty true. And I think he appreciated someone that was local and you know, was willing to look at really what just happened and not the headline that was out there.
And maybe you've just answered the next question that I have, and I'm going to ask it anyway, because you're a reporter. I know you to be somebody who with a moral center that manifests itself by your demand for transparency in government and getting the answers to questions, which is why you have become an investigative reporter. You're willing to get your hands dirty and be the bad guy in a lot of different situations, among them this one. But was he foolish or naive or to talk to you? Was he trying to spin you in these conversations? Well, what do you think is going on there?
Everyone in Bladen County is trying to spin you to their perspective. Everyone. And McRae is no more or less different than anyone else in Bladen County. So, yes, I was on guard for that. And part of the good thing about writing this book with Michael is that I have a check, right? I talk to McRae all the time. Michael never talked to him without a tape recorder on. Michael didn't have the relationship with McRae that I have. It's important to note that, you know, even though I've now spent almost 3 years talking to McRae and getting to know McRae, I still view McRae as a source and I'm a reporter, and that's important. Yeah. At a point, he was a confidential source and I couldn't talk about the detail or couldn't talk about my relationship with him at all, which right. I can now because he's obviously not a confidential source. So, you know, I think he spoke to me because he understood and trusted that I was interested in getting the full view of what was happening in Bladen County and not just telling a story about McRae Dallas, the ballot harvester.
Yeah. You wrote an article, Michael, for Politico in December of 2018. The headline read, Distrustful, Desperate, and Forgotten, a Recipe for Election Fraud. You could be describing the country today. Is this a prelude? Do you see this as a prelude to what's to come in our highly polarized country?
That's what we included in the prologue. We wrote that this is an early stage disease. And it's funny that folks read that from their own perspective. And so we had some folks say, when you say it's a disease, you mean election fraud is rampant and voter fraud is rampant throughout the country. And I said, no, that's not what we mean. What we mean is that the disease is distrust and mistrust and trust and a lack of trust in people, a lack of trust in our systems, and a lack of trust in our politics. That if you go to Bladen County and talk to 10 people, 10 people will tell you, which is what we did in 2018, 10 people will say, what are you doing here now? We don't have any, you should have been here a long time ago. And yeah. So the distrust that led to, yeah, this is the same distrust that led to essentially January 6th.
And in August, McRae Dallas will face charges of 3 counts of felony obstruction of justice, 2 counts of conspiracy to commit felony obstruction of justice, and 2 counts of possession of an absentee ballot, which doesn't engender trust either. Nick Oxner from WBTV, Michael Graff from Axios Charlotte, the authors of The Vote Collectors. Thank you for the hour. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, pledging to help end child hunger in the Carolinas through ongoing support of Second Harvest Food Bank of Metrolina. Details about this initiative at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.